Oracle Personal. Entry number 692. NML Day 327. Lex Luthor, the richest man in the world. Founder and CEO of LexCorp. If people have totem animals, then Luthor's is the great white shark. He has that same focused intensity, that same directed purpose. He's power personified. The power of money, of business, and of greed. Living in Metropolis, controlling his empire from the city of tomorrow, he had always found Gotham beneath his notice. But suddenly, he was here, in person. Suddenly, Metropolis's second favorite son was standing in front of the cameras, a champion of Gotham City, a foe of the No Man's Land. Within 24 hours of his arrival, Luthor had transformed Grant Park into his base of operations, with over 200 LexCorp personnel arriving and nearly twice that number in support services. They flew in on helicopter after helicopter, bringing equipment and people, and the flights continued throughout the night and into the next day. They built tents, including an executive Quonset hut for Luthor himself, and a huge military-style one they labeled Human Resources. They brought medical supplies and food, gasoline-powered electrical generators, and construction equipment from bulldozers to backhoes. They erected huge arc lights to illuminate the surrounding area, and LexCorp security patrolled the grounds armed with M16s and 45s. The media dubbed it Camp Lex, and they were eating out of his hand. The day after Luthor arrived, he held a press conference, which he started by reading a statement he had prepared for the cameras, and his righteous indignation transferred perfectly through the medium.
The No Man's Land is a disgrace. An embarrassment. A betrayal of the fundamental precepts this country was built upon. To deny citizenship, existence even, to our own people, is nothing less than criminal. For the better part of a year, politicians have squabbled and lawyers have debated. They've squandered time and resources, spending more money to justify doing the wrong thing rather than simply making it right. And all the while, the soul of Gotham, its people, suffered.
He gave the cameras a good beat with which to zoom in for a close-up on him or to swing around for reaction shots. He was selling it beautifully. I watched on my AV monitor using my news channel hack to pick up the live feed. Even I believed it, and I knew what he was really up to. But Luthor was that good. And the fact was, people wanted to believe him. They wanted to believe they were doing the right thing. If he was taking the lead, giving them a chance to feel good about themselves, they were going to jump at it.
Well, LexCorp says enough is enough. We have committed ourselves to rebuilding Gotham City. Starting today. Starting now.
Isn't what LexCorp doing illegal? After all, entering the No Man's Land is a criminal offense, isn't it?
Bob, my friend, listen, I will not be beholden to an immoral law, nor should any of us be. This is still a government that listens to the people, isn't it? The No Man's Land is wrong. It's as simple as that. I will not stand idly by while my fellow men and women suffer and die. It's time for us all to speak out, to stand up, and declare that we want what is right. If that's criminal behavior, then yes, I've broken the law. If the government wants to press charges, they can talk to my lawyers.
LexCorp's legal division is well known for its hardball tactics, after all. Messing with them would be like walking through Arkham dressed like, well, Batman. But there was more to it than that. More than most of the media knew. Like the fact that Luthor had dozens of politicians in his pockets, and literally hundreds more who owed him favors. Like the fact that Luthor wasn't above blackmail as a business tactic, and either had, would find, or could make dirt on anyone who proved a problem for him. And the media didn't know that he used these tactics as a matter of course.
Mr. Luthor, tell us about the human resources tent in Camp Lex. Is it true you're signing up over 100 people an hour to the LexCorp payroll?
The camera showed the long line of Gothamites approaching the tent entrance, the queue ranging out of the park and stretching for several blocks, men, women, even some children. entering in their filthy rags and with hope in their eyes. And out the other side of the tent they came, now with a pair of new coveralls, a yellow hard hat, and a bag of winter clothes and food. Proud new members of the LexCorp family.
That's absolutely right, Joe. We will employ anyone who wants to work. Within reason, of course. We're here to give them the tools and support they need. Nothing more. It's their city, after all.
So what do you get out of this, Lex?
Are you kidding me? Aside from the benefits of helping my fellow man, even I can't buy this kind of PR.
They all loved that. And it ended the press conference on a big laugh, with the cameras centering once more on the reporters, now all smiles and jokes. No man's land, what's the big deal? And that Luther, ain't he a hoot? Give me a break. I talked to Batman when he stopped by the control room that evening.
He's spinning it as a humanitarian gesture, which I suppose is the best way to play it. I've hacked the news feeds for Metropolis, Chicago, and New York, and the PR value's stunning. It's every network's lead story. They're all rushing to get their best correspondents into the NML and on the ground, and the public support has been overwhelming. They're calling him the millennium's greatest philanthropist.
Good. It should keep him busy so the real work can get done. Bruce Wayne spoke with Lucius Fox earlier today. Apparently the president is willing to consider reopening the city if certain criteria are met.
And those would be?
Infrastructure and basic services need to be restored to a quarter of the island before the government is willing to allow people to return to residency. The Army Corps of Engineers, in concert with LexCorp, Wayne Enterprises, and a handful of other major businesses, will spearhead the rebuilding.
Oh, that's good news.
They're setting a deadline. If the city can't meet the standards the government sets by New Year's, Gotham will remain closed. If it can, New Year's Day will see the official end of the No Man's Land.
You don't look too happy about it.
It's still a long way off.
He tilted his head to the nearest terminal.
Have you uploaded?
Tim and I still need a little more time. Give us a week?
Robin's going to be busy.
Doing what?
Surveillance.
Then it's gonna be more like 2 weeks before I'll be ready to send the files out.
No. Wait.
Why?
Minimum exposure. The records need to be kept secret until I need them. I'll let you know.
I live to serve.
He looked at me sharply.
You sound like Alfred.
I hid my grin behind the monitor.
Joker, where is he?
I don't know.
He's being very quiet.
Maybe he's occupied.
No. He's waiting for an opportunity. Have your eyes keep a special watch out for him. His encounter with Batgirl and Leslie has me nervous. He's getting impatient. He's going to lash out soon.
Will do. Where are you off to?
To pay a visit to the great philanthropist.
Huntress stood on the roof, looking at the distant glow of Camp Lex as evening began to fall. Clouds were rolling in off the Atlantic, pushing cold air ahead of them, and she expected that there would be more rain that night, if not snow by morning. She heard the door behind her open, and knew it was Foley.
I thought you'd be up here.
I was hoping to be alone.
Bill wants to talk to us. About the Luther thing.
Tell Commandant Pettit that I'll be down when I'm damn good and ready.
I think Bill's losing it.
The admission, not the statement, caught her off guard. For a brief second, she wondered if this wasn't some sort of test on Pettit's part. Send Foley up to talk to Huntress, see what she says, see if she's still with us. But when she looked at Foley's face, she could see the sincerity there, the honest concern. Foley wasn't a good liar. His intentions always showed on his face.
Don't get me wrong. All the people here, we've got 300 plus people living in this sector, and they're safe and warm, and he's kept them safe. You have to acknowledge that, you know? He's kept us safe.
Huntress looked back at the glow to the east, from Camp Lex, Gotham's new sunrise.
I don't know if I trust him anymore.
Huntress turned and started toward the door.
You're not going to tell him I said that, are you? You're not going to do that, Huntress?
I'm not going to tell him anything, Foley.
I'm telling you because I thought you'd understand. I thought you'd seen it, too.
He searched her face for a confirmation. A hint of some validation from behind her mask.
I have seen it too. And he can't know that. Can't know that either of us think this.
You're the only one left I've got any faith in, Huntress.
Somehow, it didn't make her feel much better.
All right. Let's go see the general.
They can't just walk away from us!
Not after all we've done for them!
Pettit picked up a box of ammunition off the desk and threw it at the wall. Huntress moved her left hand to her right wrist, just assuring herself that the launcher was still there where she wore it, for the comfort of knowing. It was there, but it didn't help. She, Foley, and Pettit were in one of the apartments in the building, the one that Pettit had dubbed as the Armory. There were guns everywhere, pistols and rifles and submachine guns, and boxes of ammunition. A variety of military equipment was scattered about as well, helmets and jackets and vests.
Look, Luther is offering work and shelter, warm clothes, money. They're just responding to that, to the chance to rebuild their homes. You can't blame them, Bill.
The hell I can't. This keeps up, we're gonna have no one left.
Calm down, Bill.
It was the wrong thing to say.
Who the hell do you think you are telling me to calm down? How many walked out on us yesterday, Hugh? Do you even know that? Can you give me that figure?
Only 15, but—
Only? That's 30 hands just went AWOL, Foley. You damn fool.
You can't blame him for that. They heard about Luther. They went to go take a look.
We're talking about our people here. Am I the only person who gets that?
That's right. People, not prisoners.
You don't get it. We're a unit, Huntress. We rely on one another. When people walk away like that, they weaken the whole. They reduce us, our strength, our capabilities.
They'll be back by nightfall, I'm sure of it.
If they want to live, they had damn well better be.
I told you. He's losing it.
Luther enjoyed his meal alone in his personal hut, dining off bone china laid out upon a linen tablecloth over the oak table he'd had flown in and then assembled that morning. The meal was prepared by his staff chefs and served to him by Mercy while he read the latest edition of the Financial Times. He started off with a 1929 Chateau d'Yquem, with which he chased down his foie gras. He followed the appetizer with a half bottle of Montrachet, of which he had only one glass, with his arugula, goat cheese, and walnut salad, by which time he had finished reading the first paper and had switched to the Daily Planet. His main course, over the newspaper, was a top sirloin cut of Wagyu beef encased in cracked black pepper, and served beside a mixture of miniature vegetables with grilled polenta, which he savored with a glass of Bordeaux, the 1929 Chateau Petrus. When he had finished the newspaper and the meal, he had a final dish of mixed cheeses, camembert, chèvre, and a Stilton, served with an assortment of biscuits, fresh fruit, and bread. He closed the meal with a small glass of 1962 Taylor Fladgate.
Update, please, Mercy.
The surrounding 20 blocks have been secured, per your order. South to Andrew, east to the water, north to the Sprang River, and west to Goodwin Boulevard. The perimeter is secure, and we have 20 additional LexCorp guards in plain clothes, patrolling the immediate area around the park.
Continue.
Cobblepot has repeatedly expressed a desire to do business with you, although I've explained the situation to him twice already. He's nervous about losing so much of what he perceives as his territory to you. I can send Bane to talk to him, if you think it's necessary.
Luther took another sip of port, then gestured Mercy over. She produced the humidor and opened it, and Lex took his time in selecting his cigar, finally deciding upon a hand-rolled H. Upman, made especially to his standards in Havana, Cuba, with a 50 ring size. Mercy cut the cigar, then handed it back and provided the flame.
What do you make of him?
Cobblepot? He wants to be you, Lex. He doesn't understand that he never will.
As long as he keeps out of the media spotlight, we'll let him play. As soon as he steps too far, he and I will talk. What else?
She replaced the humidor on his desk.
We signed up 488 laborers in the last 12 hours, all of whom will be joining the major workforce at First Light. By tomorrow night, we'll be ready to have work crews running 24 hours a day. Finally, News Channel reported this evening that, according to their latest polls, public opinion has swung 23 points in your favor. Margin of error for the poll is plus or minus 5, as to be expected. Not coincidentally, LexCorp's stock jumped 26 points.
Luther smiled around the cigar, leaning back in his chair and folding his arms behind his head.
Excellent, Mercy. You may turn down the bed.
Certainly, Lex.
He watched as she cleared the table, taking the half-empty wine bottles and dirty dishes outside, returning in under a minute to prepare his bed. She took the leather easy chair by the foot of the bed that faced the entrance to the hut, drew her pistol, and then sat, waiting. He took his time with a cigar in the port, thinking, and acknowledged that he felt quite good about the last couple of days. His people in Washington had confirmed that an executive order was forthcoming that would allow entry to the Army Corps of Engineers and the Business Coalition, and he had no doubts that the New Year's Day deadline would be reached. Gotham would reopen on schedule. His Gotham. After finishing the port, he switched on his laptop computer. He skimmed the enormous volume of email that had been forwarded from his Metropolis office. It took him roughly half an hour to reply to those that warranted his immediate attention. The rest of the mail he bounced to the appropriate subordinates with a note saying that he was not paying them so that he could do their work. He logged on to the Nikkei index next and tracked stock movements for another 10 minutes, more for the entertainment value than for any need to increase his own wealth. Then he was ready to sleep. He stripped down as if mercy weren't there. It was the way it was done, the way it had been done every night since he'd hired her. For a brief time, his vanity had plagued him, and he wondered why she didn't want him. When he realized that she didn't want anyone, instead of seeing it as a challenge, it had come as a comfort. No one would ever be able to blackmail or influence her with sex. It made him all the more certain that he had been right in hiring her. After changing into his silk pajamas, just the bottoms, he never wore the tops, he slipped between the sheets and shut his eyes.
Lights, Mercy.
Good night, Lex.
The lamps switched off. Then he slept. Luther. What woke him was a nightmare in shadow. His heart racing, Luther opened his eyes to see the shape at the foot of the bed looming over him.
Let's talk.
It was then that Luther realized who it was, and he glared at the Batman, then looked past his left to where Mercy was in the chair unconscious. Luther looked back at the Batman, who was returning his glare without the slightest hint of intimidation.
I hope you didn't hurt her permanently. Good help is very difficult to find.
She'll live.
Luther swung his legs out of the bed, reaching for the robe draped over the footboard.
Delighted to hear that.
He got to his feet. He pulled the robe on, then faced the Batman and glared into the hidden eyes.
Is there a point to this visit, or are you just planning on looming ominously at me all night?
I know what you're planning. You're not in Metropolis now. This is my city.
For now. I'm here on a humanitarian mission, Vigilante. Unless you can prove otherwise.
Batman smiled.
You're bluffing. If you had anything, you wouldn't be here threatening me.
Luther could see the easy chair past the Batman's shoulder. Mercy was beginning to stir. The Batman moved another step closer, and there was no space between them. Luther still didn't look away. In his peripheral vision, he could see Mercy quietly getting to her feet.
This is not a threat, Lex. This is a warning. You don't want me to take you out, and your bodyguard there doesn't want to start anything.
Don't bother, Mercy.
Luther made what he felt was his only mistake in the conversation then, because he looked to Mercy when he said it. She nodded, and Luther saw another motion from the corner of his eye, turned back to address the Batman, and saw that he had vanished. Luther never did get back to sleep that night. Joker swung the scythe at Batman's head. The blade cut neatly just above the cape, and his follow-through almost hit Harley, but she had ducked. Joker watched as the head bounced on the floor and came to a stop. His boys all looked down at the floor, avoiding his eyes. He looked back at the remains of the costume display, and it wasn't a nice display. It really didn't look a thing like Batman at all. And Joker felt himself coming over, all teary-eyed. He threw an arm around the costume dummy's shoulder, turning to where the ear would have been.
I just don't know what to do to get your attention. I just don't know. You don't come out to play. You're never around. It's like you're ignoring me. All I ever see are your brats, the second stringers, the wannabes, Rat Girl and the boy Blunder and, that other one that no one knows the name of.
Nightwing.
Without looking, Joker kicked her in the shins.
Ow! Sorry.
I'm starting to take it personally. I really am. And I know I shouldn't, because I know that personally you just wouldn't take anything anyway, not even from me. But really, just look at the situation here. What am I supposed to think?
The dummy remained strangely silent.
You're useless, you know that.
Joker turned from the dummy and brandished the scythe that has gathered boys.
I ask you, what do I have to do to get some attention in this burg?
Now his boys were really interested in the floor.
Well, criminy cheapers here, kids. Give me something.
The boys were as silent as the decapitated dummy. Joker turned away in disgust, tossing the scythe over his shoulder. Harley was looking at him adoringly, and the last thing he wanted right then was to be adored by her. So he grabbed her by the fluffy white ruff around her neck and used it to see if he could get her face to turn red, even under all that white makeup she insisted on wearing.
I don't get no respect, that's the problem! Jeez, listen to me. I sound like that fatso, that comedian, what's his name?
Dangerfield!
No, you idiot! The other one, the fat one! Bullock, that's it, Bullock! It's just not fair!
Aw, Mr. J, don't talk like that! You're the best, Puddin', and you know it! You rock! And if they can't see that themselves, well, then we just gotta make them see! That's what we gotta do!
Really?
Oh, yeah, of course! Absolutely! Isn't that right, boys? Boys? The problem, Puddin', is that you've been out of the spotlight for too long. That's the trouble. We gotta get you back in the spotlight.
Spotlights? That's it! I know where I can find some of those. Oh, yes, indeedy.
All right, Mercy. Let's hear it.
It happened again last night, Lex. Around 0330 at the Taylor Street site, where the crews were clearing the ground for a new foundation.
That site was guarded.
The guards panicked, Lex. By the time I was on site, Joker had left.
Continue.
Our equipment was destroyed. No fatalities.
Mercy Graves watched as her employer rose from the table, crossing to the entrance of the hut, looking out. A light snow was falling, and outside, across the compound, Mercy could see LexCorp employees in the mess tent, gathering for dinner. Luther didn't turn around.
That makes it every night this week. He's out of control, and he's costing us time and money. Mercy, take care of the problem.
Already on it, Lex.
Robin was being snowed upon, which he normally wouldn't have minded if he could move. But he had been told by Batman to maintain a static surveillance post over 5 days ago. And so he had to stay still, or at least relatively still, which to him was practically the same thing. Batman was good at staying still. Even Nightwing could do it if he really needed to. But Tim Drake liked to move, and he liked to talk, and he liked to be with people. He did not like spying. He especially did not like spying on people he was kind of fond of, and he had to include Huntress in that list. He understood why Batman felt the way he did about her. She was pretty dangerous, he knew that. She had killed people, after all. Not like the Arkham crowd, not like the criminals who used to run the Gotham streets, but yes, she'd put on a costume, and then she'd taken lives while wearing it. That was a hard thing to get past, even for Tim. But he kinda liked her, and now, after watching her and Billy Pettit strongmen for 5 days, he'd reached a couple of conclusions. One of them was that she deserved better than this. She shouldn't have to babysit Billy Pettit and not even know that was exactly what Batman had wanted her to do way back when he'd stripped her of the Batgirl mask. Robin rubbed his gloved hands together, then checked the meter on the receiver, making sure that the bugs were still functioning. The levels looked good. Across the street, in the building Pettit used as his headquarters, Tim saw lamps being lit in one of the rooms. He put the headphones on and brought the binoculars up, and saw Huntress pacing back and forth like an animal in a cage. He lowered the binoculars to turn up the volume, and saw that he wasn't alone.
Wondered if you'd come by.
Anything today?
I placed all the microphones as you ordered, and they've all checked out okay. Reading loud and clear. Other than that, nothing.
And Huntress?
She went outside a couple times today, patrolling the perimeter. I stayed out of sight, she didn't see me.
Not what I meant.
I know what you meant. Best that I can tell, she's not a happy camper.
Batman extended his hand for the binoculars, and Robin handed them over. Batman spent almost a minute scanning the building, and Robin saw that in the room where Huntress was, another figure had joined her. The light was bad, and even using night vision, he wouldn't be able to make out the features, not without the optics, but he thought it looked like Pettit.
Turn the receiver on. I want to hear them.
Robin pulled the headphone jack out of the unit, then flipped the speakers on.
Our prisoners, Pettit. They should be free to come and go as they like.
They're my people! Every time they leave this sector, they leave us weakened. That's a tactical risk I cannot and will not allow, Huntress. I want checkpoints from now on. Nobody comes in or out of here without my permission.
Are you crazy? We're not the bad guys here. We've got an obligation to protect the people in this sector. That's it. That's all we set out to do.
You don't like it, you can leave. Maybe Batman will take you back if you beg him. But maybe it's time you face facts, sweetheart. You've got nowhere else to go.
Robin could see that Huntress was alone in the room once more. Beside him, the binoculars still up. Batman hadn't moved.
Damn it.
Batman lowered the binoculars, handing them back, and then switching the speakers off.
She'll make it. She's strong.
I hope you're right.
What are the numbers on Pettit's men?
14 as of now, all trained by him. They're like some sort of Special Forces wannabe unit. Most of them were GCPD, I think.
If she tries a coup?
She can't take them all out, and the only person who might consider helping her is Foley. Even that's a maybe.
Robin glanced back at the building, where Huntress was still in silhouette by the window, her head down. It looked like she was praying.
Pettit will kill her if she challenges him. That's my assessment.
Understood. You should get out of the snow. Head to the clock tower and get some rest. This will keep for the night.
Where are you going?
I have some babysitting of my own to do.
Then he was gone, leaving Robin to wonder if his mind was truly that easy to read. They'd been doing it for long enough that everyone knew their parts and was pretty good about sticking to them, except for Harley, who had an irritating tendency to ad-lib. Joker had talked to her about it twice already, and he really hoped it would stick this time. The guards went down easily, and so it wasn't hard to get in close and bash them over the head with one of the many blunt and heavy objects lying around. The boys did this pretty quietly, which Joker appreciated, because it kept the workers from noticing. Whenever the workers noticed, they'd scream and run, and then Joker would have to content himself with simple property damage. He'd been doing this for 8 nights now, and what he really wanted was an innocent victim. More than that, of course, he wanted bats, but in lieu of bats, he'd take some poor schmuck who'd just been in the wrong place at the wrong time. That was the essence of humor, after all. Timing. Once all the guards were down, Joker gave Harley a shove out into the light, following closely behind. He'd been working with props a lot lately, but was trying to keep it simple tonight. Just boo-boo the rubber chicken surprise, that was it. Harley did a couple of cartwheels up to the edge of the pit where the workers were busy working, digging a foundation, Joker presumed.
Ladies and gentlemen! Back by popular demand for his 8th consecutive night, the one, the only, Joker!
Joker bounded out of the shadows, making certain the lights caught his good side.
Thank you so much for coming.
And his lovely and talented assistant, Harley Quinn!
Ow! No ad-libs!
The workers, of course, were now screaming for him. Or because of him. He was never certain which it was these days. The boys were moving in to exercise some crowd control, which was good because certain members of the audience were trying to get away. Of course, those were the ones that caught Joker's notice, in particular a female one, in dirty blue coveralls and a yellow hard hat, and she had red hair. And so Joker jumped into the ditch in front of her, blocking her way.
Hey, Great to be here tonight. And what's your name, doll?
Lori.
Lori! You ought to see someone about that stammer, kid.
Joker showed Lori Boo Boo the rubber chicken surprise, and she tried to back farther away, but now, since she was trapped, all she could do was move her head back farther and farther until she was pressed against the freshly cleared earth.
It just so happens that I can help you with that stammer of yours.
No, no, please, no.
Oh, no trouble at all.
He showed her Boo Boo's surprise. Inside the rubber chicken's mouth was a pair of really nasty old scissors.
Please, 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 please don't do this to me. Please.
Louder, with feeling, like you really mean it. Oh, and scream, too.
God, oh God, please. I'm begging you.
Between you and me, Lori, this has nothing to do with you. You seem like a sweet kid, the kind of girl I'd like to take home and feed to Mother. But you see, I've got to get his attention somehow, and I'm pretty much out of ideas.
And then he saw the shadow falling over him.
Finally! I was beginning to think that you didn't love me anymore. Hey, you're not Batman.
No, I am not.
Oh. This is gonna hurt, isn't it?
Bane lifted him by the collar, cocking his right fist back.
Yes, that it is.
And Joker felt the familiar hot sensation of a fist colliding with his face. And the world went all silly for a little bit. And then he was on his back, looking up at the stars. And Bane was coming out of the ditch after him. Joker still had Boo Boo in his hand, and he tried to readjust his grip so he could stab or snip with it, but Bane was already lifting him up again.
I don't think you're very funny.
Well, you know, comedy is tricky that way.
And then he was in the air again, then on the ground, and this time it took longer to get the world sorted out again. Joker was looking up a woman's skirt, at her nasties, her knickers, her underthings, her unmentionables.
I see London, I see France. Uh-oh.
Bane yanked him back to his feet, turning him to face the woman. She was blonde and big and wearing a lot of black, and she was pointing the gun right at his face.
You stand when you speak to a lady.
Oh, of course, of course. Where is she?
All you need to know is mine is the last face you're ever gonna see. No one messes with Mr. Luthor's business.
That's enough of that, Toots!
Suddenly, Joker saw that his harlequin had a great big gun of her own pointed at the mean woman's head.
You let him go, or you won't have a face!
Ain't she a pip?
The woman lowered the gun.
Let him go, Bane.
Joker dusted himself off.
Mustn't forget Boo Boo.
Retrieved Boo Boo and headed for the shadows.
Come on, Harley. Time to hit the road.
Sure thing, Mr. J.
Well, it's been fun. Toodaloo.
He waved, and then he and Harley disappeared into the darkness. Bane returned to Camp Lex with Mercy, but they parted company at Luther's hut. He had yet to speak with the man in person, and each time he'd gotten close, Mercy had prevented it, restricting access. Bane understood this, but it was both annoying and insulting. Here he had given Lex Luthor some of his best work, at least to Luthor's knowledge, and still he was being treated like a costumed lunatic, a tool to be discarded. There was a distinct lack of respect there, Bane felt. He went to the trailer that had been supplied for him, away from the main camp and the eyes of the media. He was cold and looking forward to having a brandy and going to sleep, and he was thinking of just those things when he closed the door behind him and switched on the light.
Ah, an unexpected surprise. To what do I owe the pleasure? Are you here for a rematch?
No.
No, I did not think so. You were watching tonight when the clown gave his performance?
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Bane reached past him and took the bottle of brandy on the counter and a glass, then moved to the couch.
I would offer you one, but you would decline it, I have no doubt.
I appreciate the gesture.
Bane felt the alcohol burn his sinuses and mouth. Batman, it seemed to him, looked almost relaxed. That made Bane feel strangely good about himself. Here, at least, was a man who gave him respect.
You know, it took me a while to figure out what you were up to, after that whole fiasco at the Hall of Records. You could have just told me to set off the explosives. I was planning on doing so anyway.
I needed to get a look for myself. Had to get inside.
I understand. Trust me. As I said, it took me a little while to figure it out.
But now?
Now I know. The fact that you're here confirms it. I haven't told Luther, if that's your concern.
I didn't think you would have.
You do me an honor, Batman.
I've come to repeat what I told you that night. Leave while you can. You know what I'm planning. You must know that when I'm finished, Luther won't be honoring his deals with anyone, least of all you.
I had been coming to the same conclusion. I'll be leaving in the next couple of days.
Good.
Bane raised his glass to Batman.
To your good health and good advice, Batman.
Oracle, personal. Entry number 723, NML day 336. Dear Dad, the announcement came yesterday. A press conference in the Rose Garden at the White House. The president was there, and Lucius Fox, and a handful of other businessmen. Alex, the eye who has been watching Camp Lex for me since Luther hit town, said that LexCorp put it on speakers all throughout the park, broadcasting the voices into the no man's land, loud as they could. Those who didn't hear the conference in person heard the news soon enough. I watched it on my news channel hack, Robin and Batgirl with me. It started with standard media babble, and then the press secretary made an opening announcement, saying that a decision had been reached with regard to No Man's Land. Then he handed over the podium to Lucius Fox. There were honestly tears in Lucius's eyes.
I'm pleased to announce that the president signed an executive order at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time this morning, declaring immediate aid and relief to the No Man's Land. Wayne Enterprises is proud to be one of the many businesses that helped to make this happen. At the present time, access to Gotham City will be limited to deliveries of emergency supplies, equipment, and personnel. The Army Corps of Engineers has been mobilized and will be arriving in Gotham within the next 24 hours. The goal is to return basic infrastructure and services by January 1st, New Year's Day, at which point the president has assured us that the No Man's Land will be revoked and that Gotham City will once more welcome her children home.
Then Lucius had to stop because he was so choked up, and the LexCorp representative stepped forward, began fielding questions alongside the president himself. But none of us were really paying attention at that point, because we were all hugging one another and celebrating.
Woohoo! I can't believe it! Yes! You sounded just like Tim!
Tim and I looked where Cassandra pointed, and there he was, in the room.
We did it!
No, we did some of it. Now we do the rest.
The helicopters woke me up this morning, and it was like nothing I'd ever seen before in my life. So many of them, they filled the sky. The Army Corps of Engineers came first, of course, leading the way. There had to be over 60 of their copters in just that first wave. Big ones, small ones, all of them towing giant crates or sections of prefab buildings or huge tanks full of I don't know what. Then the private sector followed. The Wayne Enterprises and Star Labs and LexCorp people, all flying in after them. From the window, if I use my binoculars, I can see the soldiers on the other side of the Gotham River, taking down the razor wire. There are naval minesweepers clearing the river. The 234th Combat Engineers Battalion is building a pontoon bridge from the mainland. There's a line of people gathered on the road on both sides of the river. Survivors of the No Man's Land cheering for the construction, and opposite them a crowd of people up from Bloodhaven and wherever else, all coming to get work and help rebuild our city. I'd never seen anything like it. But the wildest thing of all just flew past 10 minutes ago, and it's so strange, so surreal, and so perfectly Luther, I just have to share it.
I just saw a LexCorp chopper fly by carrying a giant Vermont pine tree, 100 feet tall if an inch. The quintessential Christmas tree. Christmas is coming, Dad. You believe that? I'd completely forgotten. Even with all this talk of New Year's Day, I had forgotten what came first. Alex just called in to say that the tree is being set up in the middle of Camp Lex. You have to hand it to Luther. He knows how to use his symbols. There's a rumor spreading that my section of Old Gotham may have power by the end of the week. I can't tell you how excited that makes me. Maybe, if they get everything up and working in time, if I've got electricity and even running water, I'll see if I can get a message to you and Sarah, and we can spend Christmas Eve here, together. I'd like that. I think we'll have something to celebrate.
The chill of the bedroom wrapped itself tightly around Sarah Essen's bare skin as she sat up. Then she really heard it, in the distance. She rose from the bed and went to the window. The glass of the window was cold and covered with condensation. She wiped it with her hands and looked up at the lightening sky.
Huh. Sarah? What is it?
Jim. Oh, Jim. Jim. I think it's the end. I think it may be finally over.
She felt the warmth of him as he wrapped his arms around her from behind. Resting his head against hers. Together, they stood in their bedroom, watching the sky.
Army Corps. They were in the war. Those guys are amazing, Sarah. They can make a hydroelectric dam out of a toothbrush if you give them enough time.
This is the same military that pays 10 grand for a screwdriver?
One and the same, yes.
They both knew it wasn't that funny, but it felt good. To Essen's mind, she hadn't honestly laughed since before the NML started. Then they saw what the helicopter was carrying.
Oh my God.
A huge Christmas tree.
We should go spread the news.
Like everyone in this town isn't looking up right now just like we are.
Well, then we should get outside and provide positive leadership. And maybe find out exactly why all these helicopters are here.
There's no rush.
She took hold of her husband's hands, keeping them firmly in place around her.
Let's watch for a while.
Joker stood and stared out the window of Wicked Wendy's costume emporium, looking at the helicopters flying overhead. They had started arriving before dawn, and he had gone to the window then and stayed there, looking up. And now, 3 hours later, they were still flying overhead. He knew why the helicopters were coming, and it posed a great problem to his mind. The expectations had suddenly and drastically risen, and he honestly didn't know if he was up to the challenge. Reflected in the cracked glass, Joker saw Harley tiptoeing toward him. The boys were nowhere to be seen, probably playing cards or jacks or one of those damnable collectible card games somewhere in the back of the shop. He frowned, and Harley took that to mean he was unhappy, which he was, but not at the helicopters, which he could tell was what she thought.
Puddin', you've been standing here for hours now.
Touch me and I'll feed you your arm. Can't you see that I'm thinking?
In the reflection, he saw Harley drop her arms, then her chin, as she looked down at her booted feet.
I'm real sorry they're gonna end the No Man's Land without you, Mr. J.
What did you say?
Joker whirled from the window and pounced on her. Riding her to the ground, and in the process upsetting a stand of novelty wigs.
They're not ending it without me, Harley! Haven't you been paying any attention at all?
Joking! Me!
I know. It's an invitation, Harley. A challenge. A dare, even. Look at all the trouble they're going to save this rat hole of a city. All the time and energy and money they're pouring into this wreck. They've even told me where, when, and how Gotham is to be saved.
He looked at her, waiting for her to get it. But she was turning a little blue around the lips, and her eyes were bulging, and it was pretty clear to Joker that she wasn't truly listening. He rolled off her, sitting amidst the discarded wigs and debris.
I can't disappoint them, Harley. Really. It's a built-in audience. A once-in-a-lifetime chance. I mean, before, you know, I could really grab this town by its short and curlies, but now, the stage is so much bigger. The whole world will be watching Gotham. I've got to do something that will just blow their shorts off. Something that will leave them stunned and begging for more.
Baby, I...
Baby?
Sorry! I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
He grabbed her by the shoulders.
Baby! You're the greatest. We have to get the boys together. We've got a lot of work to do. Oh, this is going to be brilliant. They'll be talking about this one for years. Batman be damned. This is going to be better. This is going to get them all.
Upon the arrival of the Army Corps of Engineers, the MASH sector had almost immediately exploded into frenzied activity. And the next morning, Cassandra arrived in plainclothes to see men and women in uniform busily building more tents, moving equipment into place, and running back and forth. Dr. Tompkins was standing in the middle of the compound, talking to a group of men in uniform, and she saw Cassandra approach.
I must say, I'm impressed that you've managed to do as much as you have here, Dr. Tompkins. We thought we'd be arriving to find the situation much worse.
It was worse, much worse, outside of this sector. There were many people who died simply because they couldn't reach us for aid. We were fortunate, Dr. Zahedi. Malnutrition was actually our biggest concern, but once the garden started producing, and then the park, most people were able to balance their diet.
Frankly, I am stunned.
Dr. Zahedi glanced around the compound, noting Cassandra and offering her a friendly smile.
Your list of critical cases is much lower than I expected.
Yes, since the major fighting died down, for the last couple of weeks, in fact, it's been mostly treating infections, the odd cuts and bruises, a couple of deliveries.
Deliveries? People had babies in the no man's land?
The nights got cold, Dr. Zahedi.
Yes, I'm sure they did. All right, then. Well, you tell us what to do. We're here to help.
Cassandra saw Alfred and tapped Leslie on the arm to say goodbye, then made her way over.
Hello, my dear. How are you today?
She smiled and wrapped her arms around him in a hug.
Yes, I'm glad to see you too. Is this simply a social visit, dear? Or is there something I can do for you?
No.
Cassandra shook her head, then put the index finger from each hand at the corners of her mouth, pulling down on one end and pushing up on the other, making a crazy face. Alfred looked at her with confusion for a second, then the light dawned.
No, no, dear, we haven't seen Joker.
Cassandra nodded and shrugged, indicating that the question had been adequately answered.
Master Bruce sent you to ask?
She shook her head, then mimed wearing a headset.
Ah, Oracle.
She nodded.
Well, tell Oracle that we haven't seen any signs of Joker since you were here to stop him that last time. But I am keeping an eye out, and I will inform you if we see any hints.
She saw that Alfred was now frowning and no longer looking at her. She turned to pursue his gaze, but beyond the soldiers moving back and forth and the patients leaving the different tents, she saw nothing but the city. She tapped him on the elbow and put the question on her face as best she could.
No, dear. Don't concern yourself. Just an old man thinking.
She indicated that he could continue and that she would be glad to listen. She was, after all, a gifted listener.
Joker, my dear, you don't know him very well. He's the worst of them. When he's quiet, like he is now, it's normally for a very wicked reason.
He put his hands on her shoulders.
You be careful.
She nodded.
Very well, then. Off with you. I have much work to which to attend.
Cassandra departed, wondering what exactly was so dangerous about Joker.
Oracle, personal. Entry number 781. NML day 344. 1250 Zulu. Dear Dad, I'm writing to you from my newly powered apartment. There were soldiers working on the street all day yesterday and today, and 15 minutes ago the lights came on, and all around the block I heard people cheering. Lights! Oh, I'd forgotten how much I miss being able to see, you know? Been over 8 days now since the ACOE arrived and all the rest,
and it's going far better than anyone imagined. It's been the sounds of heavy machinery day and night, voices from below. A couple of the more derelict buildings on the block have already been knocked down and cleared. I'm stunned by how fast it's moving, but I suppose all it takes is time, money, and manpower. If you have any two of those three, you can get a lot accomplished. If you have all three, you can get a lot accomplished a lot faster. Word is that LexCorp is now trying to run power along the whole of the east side, and the 132nd and the 98th Combat Engineer Divisions arrived in the city yesterday, setting immediately to work on sewage and water treatment. That's over 5,000 Army personnel on the ground in Gotham at this very moment, and that doesn't include the thousands more that have come in from Bloodhaven and other cities to aid in the construction. Some of the media estimates put the total emergency labor force at over 30,000 people, but personally, I think that's a conservative estimate. I know for a fact that Wayne Enterprises itself has hired over 10,000 men and women from all along the coast and ferried them into the city on their own dime. The estimate certainly doesn't include the number of people who actually remained here during the NML, and who now are working on the construction as well. A building inspector came through the day before yesterday, and I had a hell of a time convincing him that he didn't need to check the walls up here. Last thing I want is some federally funded yokel discovering my base of operations. But he was pleasant enough, calling it one of the only buildings he'd seen in the last week that didn't need major repairs to its structure. I acted surprised and delighted by the news, though the delight part was fairly honest. Frankly, I've never had any concerns about the integrity of this structure, one of the many faiths I've placed in Bruce Wayne. Speaking of which, I know Batman's been to see you about the Joker thing, how no one can find him. He's had Nightwing, Robin, and Batgirl combing the city every spare moment they get, but still nothing. I know you've had those people you can spare doing the same thing, but until you're officially police again, you've got your hands full with all your other obligations. There's a piece of me that's sure this can't be good. The Joker is up to something, and up to something big. Since Bane left town, there have been no further attacks on any of the construction sites, and I've heard nothing from any of my eyes about other activities that might be attributable to the clown. Wait and see time. And if you think that makes me nervous and tense, you can just guess the mood Batman is in. The files, incidentally, are all ready and waiting for his word to upload. He's picking his moment, though I'm not certain exactly when that will be. Probably around Christmas. Speaking of, got the note from DeFilippis, and I'm glad to hear that you and Sarah will be joining me for dinner. I sent him back to you with another note. You guys are gonna have to bring the fixins, I'm afraid. All I've got left are MREs and a variety of freeze-dried entrees, none of which seem appropriate for Christmas dinner. Looking forward to it. Have to tell you.
Penguin had sent the request for the meeting by courier, and his note had been insistent. It had mentioned the media, and had requested that Luther meet him at the warehouse off Colby at noon.
I can handle it.
No, I'll come along. He should see what he's truly up against.
Leaving Camp Lex without the media noticing took a little doing, but it wasn't impossible, and Mercy covered Luther as they worked back through the park, around where the 100-foot-tall Christmas tree stood, still bare, waiting to be decorated. No one noticed as they slipped from the camp onto the street, and for a while they walked side by side in silence, Mercy scanning the terrain for any potential threats.
Any news?
We've been suffering minor thefts of material.
Who's doing it? The bird?
I don't think so. Most likely people who don't believe that the No Man's Land will be ending in the next few weeks.
What's been stolen?
Mercy took her personal data assistant from her pocket and called up the report.
Crates 2117 and 2118, most recently.
Won't they be surprised?
Lex?
They're worthless, Mercy. Children's toys that I had shipped in to go under the tree. Dolls, cars, and the like. Don't worry about it. Just have the head office send in another shipment of the same.
They had reached the warehouse, the doors open, and through them Mercy could see Cobblepot and five of his men, including the big one, Garrett. She scanned the surrounding area quickly, confirming that there were no surprises in store for her employer. At this distance, she couldn't be certain that Penguin's men weren't armed, but it didn't truly concern her. She let Luther lead the way in, staying close to his side. Penguin gave them a broad smile, and she felt his eyes wandering over her once again. He had his umbrella with him. She noted that two of the men were in fact armed, Garrett and another, their holsters clumsily concealed beneath their winter coats.
Cobblepot, you wanted this meeting?
Indeed I did, sir. Indeed I did. And may I say, what a delight it is to meet such an august presence. It is truly an honor, sir.
He made a little bow.
What do you want?
Ah, you are a direct man. Well, I appreciate that. I sincerely do. No time for chit-chat. Very well.
Penguin adjusted his monocle, stepping forward slightly and craning his head back to look Luther in the eye.
I want a piece of the pie, my friend.
The pie?
Indeed. Whatever your angle is, I want a share. A modest one, but a share nonetheless. I have donated to your service my time, resources, and effort, as I'm certain you know. Now I feel that a broadening of the partnership is in order.
You think so?
Absolutely, sir.
And if I refuse?
Then you will leave me no choice but to shatter your philanthropic image by going to the media and explaining to them exactly how you and your associate did business with me, a known felon, during the darkest days of the No Man's Land.
Penguin smiled and spread out his palms, as if his argument were foolproof and justly compelling.
I'm afraid you would leave me no alternative, sir.
For a couple of seconds, Mercy thought Luther might actually be considering what Penguin had said, still staring down at the man.
Mercy, if you please.
Happily, Lex.
Mercy slammed her fist into the nose of the nearest of Penguin's men, shattering the septum and driving a wedge of bone into the man's brain. She followed with a quick kick between the legs of the next one. The remainder of Penguin's guards only then began to react, but they were woefully slow. Mercy kept moving. She delivered a kick to Garrett's stomach, knocking him down, then moved on to the final two. Garrett was still on the floor and had managed to get the gun out of its holster, trying to get a bead on Mercy. She kicked him sharply in the wrist, and the weapon went skittering away across the floor. Then she bent down and put her hands on either side of Garrett's head.
I thought this was a bad idea.
Doesn't matter.
She looked at Luther.
Lex?
Do it.
She snapped Garrett's neck. Then she straightened her coat and looked at Penguin, who stood dumbfounded, staring at his dead and wounded men.
Don't ever threaten me again, Cobblepot, or else you'll get another taste of my mercy.
The man from the Department of Justice was waiting for them on the steps of Central. Behind him, soldiers and workers were busily tending to the building, checking wires and fixtures on the exterior, clearing the debris from the quake and their own efforts. Someone had already repainted the doors in the dark blue of the GCPD. Most of Gordon's remaining officers were there too, waiting on the wide steps that led to the entrance. Montoya and Bullock and DeFilippis, and even Ware, holding her little boy.
Welcome home, Jim.
Commissioner Gordon.
The DOJ man came down the steps, extending his empty hand. In the other, he held a large manila envelope. He shook hands with Gordon, then with Essen, then gestured to the building.
Like what you see?
It looks beautiful.
Hey now, Commish. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Hey, are you calling me ugly?
There is the thought, Lieutenant.
The man from the DOJ grinned.
If we can get down to business.
By all means.
The DOJ man opened the envelope, removed the sheaf of papers inside, and then handed them over to Gordon.
James Gordon, on behalf of the Attorney General of the United States, I hereby present your new charter, reauthorizing you as Commissioner of Police for the City of Gotham.
Gordon took the papers, saw the seal of the United States Department of Justice on the charter, and the surge of emotion took his breath for a second.
Thank you.
As of now, your police force consists of those officers who remained with you during the No Man's Land, but we'll have more volunteers for you after Christmas. Welcome back. Nice to be in control again, huh?
You have no idea.
Gordon turned to look back at his grinning people and saw that each of them, to a person, was wearing a badge. He felt pride for his people, the same pride he had felt when they'd stood on the roof of this same building almost a year ago, resolved to stick it out. To do what was right. Then he thought of Pettit and Foley. He wondered what they had done with their shields.
Let's go in. Take a look around while it's still quiet inside.
That's an idea. You know that as soon as word gets out that we're back in business, we'll be swamped.
You son of a bitch!
Pettit took a swing at Foley and missed, and Huntress had to move quickly to keep the two men separated, pushing her way between them.
Hey! Cut it out!
No!
Pettit was still reaching for Foley.
You will attend, you understand? Everyone will attend!
It's Christmas, for Pete's sake!
I know, that's the point, dammit! Christmas Eve, and we're having a dinner, is that clear? In the gymnasium, and everyone is going to be there, and we're going to spend it together, got me? Get off me!
Pettit roughly pushed himself away from Huntress. Several of his men on the street were watching nearby, and Huntress couldn't read anything in their expressions, but when she'd moved to stop Pettit, she'd seen some of them tensing, a couple of the hands dropping closer to the sidearms, and it made her stomach all the more nervous.
You can't keep them here if they don't want to stay, not on Christmas, Bill.
I sure as hell can. What I can't do is allow our numbers to keep being whittled away like this. I can't allow our morale to be constantly eroded by propaganda and false hope. The no man's land isn't over. It's not going to be over.
Clouds of condensation billowed out of Pettit's mouth, his eyes frantically scanning around him.
Yeah, that's it. We'll have our Christmas feast in the gym. It'll be good. Everyone will come, everyone. Attendance will be mandatory for the sector.
He turned to look at Foley, and Huntress almost relaxed because Pettit finally looked calm.
That's what we're going to do, Foley. And if you've got a problem with that...
Hey, easy, Bill.
Back down, Pettit! Now!
Pettit held the gun still for a second longer, and Huntress didn't at all like the look in his eyes. He looked almost satisfied, as if Foley's fear and Huntress's anger were what he had been after all along. Then he holstered the weapon and adjusted that damn cap he always wore.
See you there, both of you.
She watched him turn, the rest of his strongmen following, as he made for the apartment building.
Oh God. Oh God, it's too late, isn't it? He's lost it.
Huntress nodded barely, watching the last of the strongmen disappear into the building.
You could probably make it out of here, you know.
No, I'm staying. He's too dangerous now. He's gonna snap.
She looked down at her hands, at where the launcher was strapped to her forearm and the crossbow folded down was strapped to her thigh.
And when he does, I'll have to stop him.